Please enjoy this ringback tone while your podcast is reached.
This is Raquel and Chelsea, and you're listening to Baroque Bitches. Welcome to Baroque Bitches, your art and art history gossip podcast. I'm Raquel.
I'm Chelsea.
And we're here to give you the lowbrow, down and dirty details on some highbrow art.
Ooh, can't wait for this spicy little number.
Yeah, this is going to be a dirty little episode, you little pervy pervs. I'm just kidding. It's not that kinky, actually. I thought it might be a little bit more. But yeah, I mean, we'll make up for it. That's with okay. What is lacking in kink. We've got plenty.
And as a
doll. I heard you got sloppy at Applebee's last night, Chelsea.
That is my place. It's the place where me and my husband got engaged.
Oh my God. I did not know that.
Yeah,
That?
We go there all the time. And it's like, that's the place. In 2020, when we had to eat outside in the parking lot.
Oh my
so
God.
So technically, I got engaged at the Applebee's parking lot.
COVID, like makeshift outdoor restaurant.
Yeah, the little like patio cover tarp situation.
Yeah.
We love it though. And they kind of tricked me last night. So I ordered, I don't know what it's called, strawberry razzmatazz. Like whatever it is, because it looks so good on their little menu. I was like, oh, that. I'm drinking that all night.
Oh,
and so I got one, and I didn't realize they have like a shaker full of like a whole nother
extra cocktail. Wow.
Yeah. So I drank one, and then I ordered another one. And when the guy brought it, he's like, oh, you know there's like a ton more in this shaker.
Oh my God.
And I was
God.
Like, oh, I thought like, oh, maybe a little bit. Oh, thanks for leaving the shaker. And there's like an ounce.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, there's a whole nother one in the shaker. And then he brought the other one with a shaker with more booze in it.
Dude, it's like a Cadillac margarita, but with like a whole other cocktail.
An entire other cocktail. So
I love a cocktail that comes with a bonus cocktail.
Two for one. That so feels like the Castro.
I was going to say the Castro in San Francisco.
Yeah.
All the gay bars there have 2-for-1 drinks.
Yeah.
So like you just get wasted. Like the best invention ever. Yeah, yeah. I love it.
So I'm like, okay, well, I guess I'm drinking all of this stuff. I'm not driving, so it's fine. And all the apps, man. We got the fucking pretzels with the beer cheat. And my favorite thing in the world, wonton tacos.
Damn. Dude. I've seen those. I've seen the girls making those on the internet, on the Instagram stories. I'm like, damn, I got to make some wonton tacos. Those are dope.
They're so good. They're so good. I'm a little faded today.
So we recorded a bonus episode that will be released on St. Patty's with Chelsea's oldest and dearest friend, Anne.
Yes.
What's Anne's maiden name?
Anne Lockman.
Lockman.
It's very Irish. Lady of the Lake.
Lady of the Lake. So we had a fun time last night. I'm not hungover, but I feel like this time change has me all fucked up.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the kids are waking up in the middle of the night. The sun's still out. It's 8 o'clock. It doesn't make any sense. Just like, I went to the dentist today.
I'm sorry.
No, it was fine. The doctor actually said, I'm loving what I see here. Which was
show
such
off.
It was such a funny thing. I'm like, a dentist has never said that to me before.
Yeah. Of like, oh, you're actually fluffing.
Oh, you do, doctor. Are you flirting with me right now? What's going on?
Seriously.
I'm loving what I'm seeing here. It was so nice. I'm like, thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, that's like dentists now probably know how bad of a reputation they have. Yeah. And they've like come full circle on the treatment of their patients. They're like, okay, we really need to make up for Little Shop of Horrors. They're like, Little Shop of Horrors, we got to make up for the scene, you know.
I thought you were going to refer to like sometimes that we fall asleep in the dentist chair when we need to and weird things have happened.
No, there's this horrible scene in Little Shop of Horrors where there's like the evil dentist that likes to hurt people, and then the patient comes in that likes pain. So the dentist is like trying to hurt the patient, but the patient's like, oh yeah, I love it. And I think it's either Bill Murray or Steve Martin. I can't remember. It's been a long time since I've seen that movie. Good scene. But no, I feel like they've like, you know, because everybody hates the dentist, or at least I did.
Yeah.
Oh, they feel like they need to make up for it now.
Totally.
So got squeaky clean teeth. Nice. Feeling a little loopy. But but overall doing okay over here. No. Cool. Yeah. Yeah.
Good, good.
Yeah, this one's gonna be good. I'm excited for this episode. Yeah. I'm always excited for every episode. I know I say it every single one. I'm so excited, but I am. You know, we're doing,
I am too.
We're doing the bitch, the bitch. I mean, this woman has so much accomplishment that goes way beyond her reputation. So,
oh yeah,
Chelsea, you're not a Beatles fan. Are you a Beatles fan?
I'm not like a huge, I mean, I know the songs. I like the songs, but I'm not a huge like listener. I don't have them like downloaded on my phone kind of vibe.
Sure. Yeah. See, but I can appreciate it. On Sundays, the Breakfast with the Beatles on Jack FM, you know, in LA.
Yeah, they do
Breakfast with the Beatles. Throw that on. Start your Sunday morning right. But that's the thing about Yoko Ono. She always gets lumped in to just being like John Lennon's wife, right?
Yeah,
and there's so much more about her. So those of you that are Beatles experts and Yoko experts, maybe move on, okay? This is not for you. This is for people that like want to open their mind, be a little bit more open-minded to like falling in love with Yoko Ono and knowing her more as a person. And this marriage just being like a blip of her life.
Yeah.
So we'll get into it, but should we start down?
Visualize. I'm so ready.
All right. Let's visualize. Lay down. No, come right here. Next to me, come lay down. Look at the sky. I know it hurts. I know you're hungry, and I know it's so hard. But look. Look at this big menu in the sky right up above us. Don't you see it? I see it. You have to imagine. Just imagine. We can order anything we want. Look, I see soups. And pork. Oh, you like pork, don't you? Okay, so we'll get rice and some pork and fish and noodles. I know it's been days. I know your stomach is gnawing and scratching. I know, but we just ordered. Ah, yes, it will all come to us. Look, here it comes. Eat up. I taste salty, sweet broth with big chunks of meat. Chewy noodles. What do you taste, Kasuke? Oh, you do? See, that's better. We'll be full again. We will. Everything will be okay. As long as we have the sky, everything will be okay. Hunger cannot keep us from imagining. Look up. Look up. Keep looking up. Kisuke. Even when everything is falling apart around us, we can never give up on life, okay? As long as the sky is there. So welcome to Yoko Ono, Loving, Starving, Screaming, and the Sky.
Wow. That's a good one.
Dude, So it all makes sense in a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. So this one today is very fitting for the kind of week we had on Baroque Bitches, because we got our first hater in our stars. We got our first low star review, a 2-star review on Apple Podcasts.
Ew, and listen, sorry, don't get it.
And listen, haters are gonna hate, but whoever you are,
just
a 2, really? Like, if you're gonna hate, at least give us a 1. Like, passionately commit to not liking us.
There's something that they liked.
There's something that they like to up it just by 1.
Oh my god,
I know. But whoever you are, you're probably not listening. If you are, you know,
if you are, then give us a better rating if you're still listening after all this time.
But whoever you are, we're sending you light and love, and we wish you nothing but the best.
Yeah, that's a good way to do it.
Yeah, but also, as Laura from Love is Blind said, we wouldn't mind if you kicked rocks without shoes on a little bit.
For sure.
But anyways, I think it's important because the woman today, she's been subjected to like a shit ton of hatred.
Yes.
Her name has literally been changed from a proper noun to a verb in order to describe a bitch you don't like. Like,
wow.
Someone that comes and breaks up your friendship or coming between, you know, for friends.
Yes. You're the Yoko Ono of the group.
Yeah. Like,
fuck, man. Yeah. Come on. That's not fair.
It's not fair at all. But, you know, she's so unique. She's her own person, possibly one of the bravest and most unique women of the art world. And that often goes missed. I was actually on the phone with my dad today talking about her, and he was like, Yoko Ono is an artist? I'm like, yeah, dad, come on.
She's kind of a big deal.
Yeah. And so, yeah. And I remember learning about her in art school, and like my breadth of knowledge before that did not extend further much past like how everybody knows her, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Of like, girlfriend is a great artist. Oh. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, it's not just John Lennon's girlfriend. She has like whole ass thing going on.
She's a whole ass person.
Yeah.
And her work is super important.
Yes.
And the Beatles drama is juicy as fuck. So I have included it. Hang out for it.
Yeah,
but the goal of this episode is really for you to get to know who Yoko is. So if you're on the fuck Yoko Ono train, keep an open mind. Do not be that guy at the party. So let's get into some context.
Yeah. ASM.
Who, what, when, where, why. So we're going to 1930s Japan, specifically Tokyo. And Tokyo at this time would have been like a bustling metropolis, much like it is today, obviously without all the technology and stuff. But this is the 30s. So we're pretty much just like on the brink of World War II. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to get heavy into the war and the political stuff. But Tokyo is bustling with lots of entertainment, culture, partying, but like volatile tension is a brewing, right?
Yes.
So mom is Isoko Ono and dad is Esuke Ono. And this is the time when parents are like really too busy for their children in general, especially if you're rich and they are fucking loaded.
Oh.
So it's like, yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah. So Yoko Ono does come from like a wealthy ass family. Mom is a glamorous socialite.
Ooh. I want to be a glamorous socialite. Wait a second.
Right?
can that be my career? Chelsea, glamorous socialite.
Researcher is like, mom is a glamorous socialite. Like, she, I guess, would have been really beautiful.
Wow.
Like, you know, the little finger waves in the hair. She's like doing it upright. But we're not really giving out the warm and fuzzies from mom, and she's extremely self-involved. She wasn't really there for Yoko, but then when she is, she's really fucking hard on her and saying shit like, you're so handsome, but you have too big of cheekbones to be beautiful. So, yeah, fuck the mom.
Wow.
A little bit.
Okay.
Right? Yeah, right? Like, okay, thanks, mom.
Thanks, mom. It's cool.
You can go shave your back now. And dad is a musician and a composer, but also comes from like a wealthy banking background.
Ooh.
So when Yoko's grandpa, dad's dad, dies, he puts it in his will that he wishes for him to quit music and follow in the family business. So, and on top of that, mom's family is not like exactly stoked that dad's a musician. They're also classy bankers.
Yeah.
So they're like, he's lowly musician.
Artist.
You work with your hands?
No.
Disgusting.
Creative? No.
Yikes.
Sounds like a hobby.
So, yeah, you have to leave that child bullshit behind and join our family business. So he does become a banker and gives up his composer dreams.
Oh.
Yeah. Sorry. So then on February 18th, 1933, Yoko Ono is born. So she's an Aquarius, the weirdo sign, just like me, and I fucking love it. So Aquariuses, if you guys don't know by now, and this from Allure, are free-spirited and eccentric. You can often spot this air sign through their offbeat fashion sensibilities, unusual hobbies, and nonconformist attitudes. Rebellious in nature and unique, the Aquarius zodiac sign signifies intelligence, spontaneity, and independence.
Mm.
So yeah, put that in your pipe and smoke it. Definitely on point for Yoko. But Yoko is born into like a really lonely life. Her dad's new jobs means that he has to move, and he goes and lives in San Francisco and doesn't even meet Yoko until she's 2 years old.
Oh, wow.
And when they do meet, she's like, he's just a stranger.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't act excited to see her. Like, she's like, do you even like me? Like, I'm your fucking daughter.
Yeah.
Yeah. So weird.
Awkward.
Weird family dynamic. Not really the best.
Bummer.
But dad moving around a lot meant the family did too. And she spends the first few years of her life in San Francisco.
Ooh.
Yes. And her early life, she did feel like an outsider, and she was constantly afraid of everything. You know, when you're a kid, like your fears are heightened because you're so imaginative.
Yeah.
It's like that, but it sounds like it was just so paralyzing for her. Like having a typical fear of the dark, but then just being like hauntingly afraid of the dark, you know?
Wow.
And I remember when I was like, I think like 5 or 6, I saw JonBenet Ramsey People headline like on a People magazine that my mom had left out.
Yeah.
And that like destroyed my childhood.
Oh, wow.
Like I was so terrified after that. And I would sleep in my parents' room until I was like 9 years old.
Dang.
Because I was so scared.
Yeah.
So I relate to her. I was terrified of everything too.
Wow.
Yeah. So she did have 2 younger siblings, but doesn't really describe being super close with them. She doesn't feel valued by her parents at all. And one day she's singing Japanese children's songs. And her mom's like, ew, where'd you learn those street songs from? Disgusting.
Okay.
Yeah. And well, of course, she learned them from her nanny.
Oh,
so mom decides, okay.
They're poor people songs or something.
They're like poor people songs.
Okay.
And so her mom's like, okay, look, you can sing, but like you have to be fancy about it.
Okay.
And sends Yoko to like the fanciest school in Japan.
Wow.
So Yoko does receive a formal training in operatic singing, composition, and piano.
Okay.
And I do think she values and looks up to dad because her first real ambition is to become a musician, and he was a composer.
Yeah.
So she tells him she wants to be a pianist, and he discourages it by telling her, like, oh, your hands are too small. So then she's like, well, then I'll be a composer. And he's like, there's no female composers.
Right. Yeah.
So okay. He's just like bitter dad, not helpful at all.
Okay. Well, what do you need me to do with my life for to make you happy?
Exactly. Right. And the parents are super harsh critics of her, right?
Yeah.
Which sucks. But this actually prepares her for what will become a lifetime of harsh criticism.
Foreshadowing.
So they're living in San Francisco, but then things start to heat up with World War II, and mom gets wind that, like, Japan's going to be bombed, so decides that they need to move back there, possibly to, like, avoid internment camps in the United States.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So they move back to Tokyo. Essentially, right when Japan enters into an alliance with Germany and Italy.
Mm.
And things really go south for Japan when they return. Tokyo is, like, under attack and being bombed.
Mm-hmm.
And the country is cut off from resources, which is why they enter into the war in the first place. And Yoko and her family had to seek shelter in bomb shelters.
Mm.
And people were starving. She would have seen people dying of starvation. Her father was taken as a prisoner of war into a concentration camp in Vietnam.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So she has memories of being just so, so hungry, and her brothers crying to her, her little brother crying to her, and her just being like, lay down, let's look at the sky, and imagining a menu and ordering from it.
Yeah.
So that's where the, like, first visualize, that's where my visualization comes from.
Wow. Oh my gosh. Like, let's pretend we have food right now.
Let's pretend that there's a menu and it'll help satiate us.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so the sky, I know. And so the sky becomes massively important to her in her work and in her life. And because she describes it as, like, the only thing being constant when everything else is chaos. But the beautiful thing about clouds in the sky is that they'll eventually dissipate and go away.
Wow.
So she's very, like, ethereal, a very thoughtful, very conceptual.
Mm.
Yeah. So
interesting.
Yes. And the war, of course, impacts her too. I mean, seeing that shit must be so traumatizing.
Yeah.
Right now, even seeing just shit, like all the images of children starving in Gaza right now from this genocide happening is so jarring for me. I can only imagine, like, actually being there and how fucking crazy and horrible it might be.
Yeah. Horrific. I can add a little bit to this because my stepmom, Katsumi. Mm-hmm. Hi, Katsumi, if you're listening.
Hi.
She's from Osaka, Japan. And she's younger than Yoko Ono for sure. But she was living in Osaka during the two atom bombs that fell on Japan. And it didn't really affect her town as much. But, I mean, it would basically be like, I'm living in L.A. and San Diego is gone now.
Right.
Like, there's a city. The big-ass city is gone now.
It just doesn't exist anymore.
And, of course, all of the turmoil and craziness that happened after that with radiation poisoning and continued bombing. And her big thing is she was a little kid, but she does remember her parents being just totally traumatized by the news saying Japan surrenders. She's like, I remember that. She even said, she was like, I thought we were supposed to be the best nation in this bitch.
Right.
How are we surrendering? The emperor is supposed to be God because it is kind of, it's so hardcore nationalist that the emperor is really considered almost kind of divine, of like, he's perfect.
Well, and they have to get you bought into, like, war somehow, right? I mean, and that's got to be a really... And I mean, Katsumi's so sweet. And I think, like, when you see interviews of Yoko Ono, too, like, there's no touch of, like, what she's been through, what 100%. She's seen.
Like,
it's like... She's seems super chill, soft-spoken, she seems so sweet. And you don't really pick up on this fact that this woman's been through so much trauma.
Well, I always think it's interesting of kind of what happened to art in Japan after that. That's the first introduction to anime as we know it. So the first introduction of Astro Boy, fucking Astro Boy, like a character, a kid's character that's based off of these nuclear weapons.
Right.
And they're like, we had to do something. We had to make it fun. There's nothing else. And that's, you know, a little bit of the Japanese contemporary art is like tragedy, but make it fucking cute. It's it's so wild. And it's super interesting of like how this whole nation was able to cope with such gnarly ass tragedy that we couldn't ever imagine.
Yeah. I mean, and absolutely. And I don't think that this like is to say that she's not going through the thick of it. I think that like in American culture, we're really like brazen and outspoken with how we're feeling. Mm-hmm. And in Japanese culture, it's more about like harmony and community. Yeah.
What can you do to make things better right now?
Right. Yeah. Like, so I think that does play into like her, like how she carries herself and how she presents.
Yeah. And it's funny, like my Japanese family is definitely like, I can't tell if they like me or if they're being polite.
I mean, yeah.
They're always going to be pleasant and wonderful and gracious and spoil the shit out of me.
Well, I'm sure that they love you. And I mean,
but you never, sure I don't know. Yeah, not. I got my dad over here too. I'm just like, I don't know if they really like this guy, but they're going to be way too polite to ever make that known.
You would never know.
Yeah, you would never know. Yeah, they're wonderful.
Well, but the thing about Yoko Ono, like, is that I really, like, love is that in some of her interviews later on, because you'll see her in interviews and the interviewer will be, like, making fun of her. You know, making fun of her work. And she just never addresses it, doesn't become combative, doesn't argue with it.
I would set a bench on fire.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
But that's like how calm, cool, collected she is. And she basically is quoted basically saying, you know what? They don't get it. And
they don't
if
get
I
it.
Say anything, they're not going to get it. Like, I'm not going to say anything. Fuck them.
All right. So, higher vibrations over here.
Right. But it's like she reserves that voice for her art because her art is super disruptive and is, you know, outspoken in a way and does have like a loudness to it that we do see that come out. So, yeah. So moving forward, she does move after this. She goes to college in Japan at Gakushin University. Sorry if I'm mispronouncing that. To study philosophy. And she doesn't fit in there. So then she goes to Sarah Lawrence in New York to study music. And she doesn't fit in there either. Mm. She's studying music, but she's trying to push the limits of what music can be and what can be considered music. She's not approaching it from a classical or even like a jazz approach. She's looking to use it as an expression and to be experimental. And her teacher basically says, look, this shit's too bananas for Sarah Lawrence. Like, you can't do that shit here. But there is this bananas music elsewhere, and it's called Avant-Garde. And go to New York City. So she goes to New York City, and it's like a whole new beginning for her. She's a young woman, free of the family. She starts hanging out with avant-garde people. She's really indulging her artist side. Meets her first husband, Toshi Ichinagi. And he was already, like, pretty established in the avant-garde music scene and starts studying with John Cage. So let's talk about some arty things. The Fluxus movement. So this is a fun art movement. It comes after Dadaism and Futurism. Okay. And it's kind of hard to clearly define because that's the way the Fluxuses wanted it. They're like, there should be no rules, man. Rules are for the man. And rules are like oppression. And oppression's the opposite of expression. So like, fuck the rules.
Ooh, oppression opposite of expression.
But seriously, it's like, it's a conceptual art movement, and it challenges artists to create a more like immersive experience by using multiple mediums and becoming as uninhibited as possible.
Okay.
So John Cage had a lot of influence on Yoko Ono. If you don't know who he is, that's okay. He is a composer, and I would recommend looking up videos of him on YouTube so you can see how his music is made. Because if you just listen to it, it won't ring home how it's supposed to. Oh. He uses like a stopwatch to ensure that timing is sequential and precise. But then he'll use unconventional sound elements to create a song or a recording. So instead of using like drums, he'll put a flopping fish on piano strings, or he'll pour a glass of water, or he'll make toy guns pop, sort of deal. Okay. And it creates this like visual element that's really interesting, but it also sounds like a song.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like, how do we use these things that have never really been used for music, or, you know, they're not for music.
Yeah.
Like the ready-mades almost, right?
Mm-hmm.
But a step further.
Mm-hmm.
And Yoko Ono loves this idea and starts making compositions with similar ideas behind them, one even including the sound of a toilet flushing.
I love it. Hell yeah.
Right? And though she never joins the Fluxus movement, but she's considered a part of it because she studied under him, and she's constantly hanging out with dudes like Alan Capgras, Brecht, Mack Lowe, and others. But she's more commonly considered a conceptual artist or a performance artist, and the Fluxus movement would have been like, why do we need these labels? Like,
totally. You know? Labels are oppression. Oppression is the opposite of expression. Right?
You like that.
I like it. I'm taking it.
So in 1961, she finds her first apartment studio space in Manhattan, and she works with this other composer, Lamont Young, and together they host a bunch of immersive concerts combining music, visual arts, performance art, like really trying to blur the lines between what art is and push the limits.
Okay.
And people fucking eat this shit up.
Yeah.
They fucking love it. So some of the guests and performers include Terry Jennings, John Cage, Marcel Duchamp, Peggy Guggenheim, Isamu Noguchi, yeah, Max Ernst, Jasper Johns, Robert Rauschenberg.
Wow. You know,
they all, it's like a hip, cool spot to be.
Yeah. Take me back for like 1 second.
And just I can one. I feel like we would fit right in.
Yeah.
Like, I want to go. Rolling on the ground. Right?
Yeah.
So fun. So she says, what John Cage gave me was confidence that the direction I was going in was not crazy. It was accepted in the world called the avant-garde. It was a great feeling to know that there was a whole school of artists and musicians who gathered in New York at the time who were each in his own way revolutionary. So, yeah, sounds so dope.
Yeah.
At one of these concerts is where we see her conceptual visual art introduced. And conceptual art, guys, it's really just like art that makes you think.
Yeah. It's a concept. It's an idea.
It's an idea. The art becomes more about the idea behind the art than the actual physical product.
Yeah.
So a good example of this, she has a piece called Painting to be Stepped On. And it's literally just a piece of canvas left out on the floor for people to make together by stepping on it and leaving their footprints over and over and over again.
Mm.
So a lot of her work at the time and even now invites the audience to participate in it and discuss it.
Hell yeah.
So we could easily go there with something like that, right?
Yeah.
Like, talking about how all of our steps contribute to making a greater art piece.
Yeah. Or we all make something together.
Right.
Yeah.
And how if we're like, how we are all contributing to
we're
the
all
world.
One of us.
One of
us. Yeah. I like it.
Yeah. So things are going pretty great for Yoko artistically. She's invited to perform her music at Carnegie Recital Hall.
Wow.
She performs concert and she's like blowing up.
Yeah,
she's
doing seriously.
Concerts in Tokyo. She's meeting all sorts of friends. But things with her and Toshi are not planning out so well. So mom and dad are do not like Toshi. I mean, okay. You can imagine they're like screaming inside of this whole
we want you thing. With a banker or a something.
Banker, right. Yeah. Or just be hot like mom.
Yeah.
So
glamorous socialite.
Just be a glamorous socialite. Come on, get out of here. They're like, you're not suitable for our daughter, but Yoko is super into Toshi. She was young and wanted to be an artist, and I think she actually just uses him as like a tool, really, though, to immerse herself in the scene. Oh. Because that would have been really fucking exciting.
Yeah.
Well, Yoko and Toshi had even eloped to avoid the difficulty of dealing with mom and dad. But Yoko's living in New York, having the time of her life, and then she meets this other dude, Anthony Cox. Yeah. And Cox would have been like another alt dude, you know, Devendra Banhart of the time. He was a jazz musician, filmmaker, and overall beatnik, avant-garde, weirdo, hottie. So, of course, Yoko does fall in love. And now we have our first love triangle. So Toshi obviously is not into that. Yeah. He leaves and goes back to Japan quickly after Yoko attempts to unalive herself.
Oh, no.
And you would think that it would have had something to do with, like, the love triangle situation.
Yeah.
But Anthony Cox actually says the reason she does it is because her parents didn't approve of her being an artist.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. So one thing that I've noticed throughout all of this is that Yoko Ono is an artist. That is her primary purpose in this world.
Yeah.
And she is not quick to let anything get in the way of it. It's the most important thing to her is being an artist. Wow. So, yeah. And I think most successful artists in any craft have to be obsessive about it. And she certainly is. So when she attempts suicide, her parents scoop her up. She goes back to Japan, and she's actually institutionalized. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
No. Wow. But Anthony Cox follows her and supports her while she's undergoing treatment. She divorces Toshi, and a few months later marries Anthony Cox. And a few months later after that, they welcome their daughter, Kyoko Cox. Yeah. So they move back to New York. She gets right back into making work. And so let's talk about grapefruit. So grapefruit is an exceptional piece of conceptual art. It really encapsulates like the full Fluxus movement. And it's a book that is comprised of pages of typed instructions that are broken into five sections: music, painting, event, poetry, and object. So each page lists a set of instructions, and you can see the influence from that early experience of reciting menus to her brother that really influences this. And the title Grapefruit is perfect because Yoko Ono, she thought a grapefruit was like a hybrid of citrus fruits, and she thought of herself as like a hybrid of American and Japanese culture.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a lot of meaning embedded into like every single thing she does.
Okay.
So I'm going to read two instruction pieces. So this one's called Collecting Piece 3. So break your mirror and scatter the pieces over different countries. Travel and collect the pieces and glue them together again. You may use a letter or a diary instead of a mirror. You may break a doll or an airplane 1,000 feet high in the sky over a desert. 1963 autumn. So you can get the visual of what she wants you to do.
Yeah.
And you can imagine it in your brain and use your imagination to make the artwork.
Wow. So, yeah.
So and more immersive, right?
Yeah.
It's like these are just written words, but they're also mounted to a wall. You can read them. It has a physical object to it, but then it has an imaginative capability. And then when you say it out loud, it has a sound capability too.
Yeah.
So we're getting more like using all of these different elements, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this one's called Peace for the Wind. And it just says, cut a painting up and let them be lost in the wind. Let the pieces be lost in the wind. So Like, you could cut a painting up and just throw it to the wind, and that's it. That's the piece, right?
And it is another, like, we're all making the artwork. Like, you right. can actually make this artwork yourself.
You are a part of the artwork just by reading it, too.
You're not just
or
the viewer.
Or you can go and make it, yeah.
Yeah.
Everything yeah. is a choice, how you choose to act, and you have the power of action, so... Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you can see the instructions could actually happen, and they have to do with calls to action, collective work, togetherness. And so we so passively participate in life, but we have the opportunity to take these actions, but will we? Mm-hmm. We can make the art if we participate together. We can make things happen. We can make things change,
yeah.
but will we?
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a lot of meaning. You can fucking go off the rails if you want to. Or not, you know, whatever. No big deal. So another performance piece, the big one, the famous one, the one that'll make everybody fucking fall in love with her, Cut Piece.
Yes.
So Cut Piece is the piece that made me realize how much I love Yoko Ono. I mean, yes. Chelsea, how do you feel about it?
I think it is fucking brave, first of all. Like, really yeah. fucking brave.
Yeah.
This is definitely the one where it's like, performance art 101, Yoko mm-hmm. Ono, cut.
Right, right. Yeah,
yeah.
It's definitely like, yeah, like you have to know about
you
it.
You know this one if you've been in one where, and do you want to describe it?
Yeah, yeah. So, and if you haven't heard of it, I'm so excited for you because like, it's so strong. Look yeah. it up on YouTube.
It's hardcore.
It's hardcore. So it follows these instruction pieces and asks the audience to participate. So Yoko Ono sits expressionless on a stage, and the audience is simply invited to come up and cut her clothing with a pair of scissors. And you can watch the performance, and at first, people are like kind of timidly approaching her, cutting little pieces off of her dress. Some are laughing as they cut a small piece off the arm, but then slowly but surely, as each piece gets cut off, the momentum starts increasing, and the voyeurs slowly become the aggressors. So people become more brazen about cutting yeah. away her clothing, and yeah. men start cutting off her bra straps, but she mm-hmm. still remains there unfazed, non-reactive, oof. And sort of like modestly covering her breasts. And it's haunting. Yeah. Like, it really does show you how quickly people can become abusive, like when given the mm-hmm. chance to.
Yeah.
And though Yoko denies this as being a feminist piece, I think that more has to do with challenging the viewers to like come up with their own opinions on what it means. Rather, yeah. she's like, I'm not going to tell you what I think it is. You need to think for yourself. Talk about
yeah.
it.
Yeah. So, it's about like submissiveness and vulnerability and
yeah.
yeah. And then some assholes in the crowd.
Right. And how we expect women to just take it.
Mm-hmm.
Like yeah. you can just walk all over her and she's expected to remain passive.
Yeah.
So
it's so yeah. hardcore, you guys.
It's a strong one.
And then every time she performs it, because she's performed it a million times,
yeah.
every time she performs it, it's going to be a little bit different because the audience members are going to be different. So
yeah.
I feel like there's some times where it's like art people. So they'll be like, oh, thank you so much. I love your work. I'm just going to take a little piece. Okay. And then, and then other people, you know, other times where she'll perform it and like maybe not so much of an art environment where they right. get it. It's just like out there in the open with the public.
Right.
They'll come up and like cut off half of her dress right away. But right when
right.
they're the first one there, some fucking guy usually.
But always a dude. Like why yeah. is it always yeah.
Not all men, but usually always a man.
Yeah.
But yeah, and they'll be like, fine, you want me to cut your dress? Fine, I'm gonna cut it off. And you're
yeah.
like, okay, it's an art piece, man. Like, get into it.
No, but that's like, but I think that's what she wants. It's like, yeah,
you're displaying
your true self. You're yeah. just a reflection of like your actions.
Totally. Of like, okay, this was kind of the point of someone coming
right.
up here being aggressive.
Yeah. And you just proved me right, motherfucker.
Totally. bitch.
But yeah, so this is a strong one. It's a good one. Go look it up, please.
Yeah.
Cut piece, Yoko Ono. So she's gaining momentum. She's still in the art world. And then one day, a man walks into a gallery showing that she's showing at. And she says, person came and asked if it was all right to hammer a nail in a painting. And I said it was all right if he pays 5 shillings. Instead of paying the 5 shillings, he asked if it was all right to hammer an imaginary nail in it, and it was John Lennon. And I thought, so I met a guy who plays the same game I play.
Yeah, juicy.
John Lennon said, and that's when we really met. That's when we locked eyes, and she got it, and I got it. And as they say in all the interviews that we do, the rest is history.
Wow.
Yeah. So she's like, oh my God, you get it.
You get it.
He's like, I get it. Let's go home. No, but really, that's like how it's like immediately they just like fall so hard for one another.
Wow.
Yeah. So let's get into the rumors and the drama because obviously this wouldn't be Baroque Bitches without the tea. Yeah. And there's a lot.
Yes.
And it mostly has to do with John and their time together. So let's start with the obvious question. Did she actually break up the Beatles? So here's the thing. We all have a friend or have either gone through this ourselves where a relationship starts and it's like instant and hard infatuation. Mm. And there's love too, but they're both like sexmatized, artmatized, fametized, just like enraptured with one another. Yeah. And it starts out great, but then all of a sudden you start seeing less and less of your friend. Mm-hmm. And when you do see them, they're either miserable talking about the other person or they're with the other person constantly. So very quickly, a codependent situation sort of begins.
Mm.
But regardless of how healthy or unhealthy the relationship is, I do not think she broke up the Beatles. I think the Beatles were already going to break up. They were already filled with these 3 big egos.
Mm. Yeah.
And then Ringo.
Yeah, he's Ringo. Like just
the
chilling.
Cutest, bestest Beatle.
I love Ringo energy.
Oh my God, he's so great. But Paul, George, and John were already being driven apart. Like, they all wanted to do their own thing. And she was just around when the Beatles were already coming to a close. And Paul will vouch for this, too.
Mm.
So, and he even calls her a badass, which she totally is.
Yeah.
But people do hate her with an undying passion back then and even now. And I think a lot of that just has to do with the fact that she's Japanese and a woman.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they did not understand her art and were not trying to.
Yeah.
And she also is unapologetically making really brave art. So if you listen to some of their music together, you'll hear Yoko screaming.
Mm-hmm.
And this has to do with her bringing the most primal form of human sound into the work. So she says, before humans had anything, they had a voice. And screaming and crying and moaning are all the sounds that we can all relate to on a primal level if we challenge ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
These are meant to be like evocative and conceptual, not exactly the bangers that the Beatles are known for. So people are hypercritical of this experimental music that they make together.
But wasn't this their kind of like more metaphysical stage of their music style,
totally.
Hippy dippy. Well,
and I mean, but she's on Beatles recordings too. And she also is, you know, John Lennon and her do albums and then she does her own albums. There's all sorts of music that's created as a product of this relationship.
Mm.
And some of it is super poppy, like It's Gonna Rain. Mm-hmm. That song is super, super catchy. I love it. And then others are more experimental and like screamy and stuff like that. Mm. So I know what you're thinking. What about Yoko's husband and daughter, right?
Like, oh, yeah, I forgot. I forgot she had a whole ass family.
Yeah, she had a whole ass family. Well, so Anthony Cox is not like super stoked on the fact that Yoko is now in love with John Lennon.
A fucking rock star, yeah.
And John Lennon's married too when they meet, by the way, and also has another kid.
Oh, wow.
So his wife, Cynthia, he has Julian Lennon. With Cynthia Lennon, his first wife. So his wife, Cynthia, gets to be the one that discovers him and Yoko in her home wearing matching white robes. So that's fun to get home from your vacation and your husband just chilling with another lady.
Dude. Bummer.
Well, so Tony Cox does not take it that well either. They enter into a very messy divorce and custody battle, which basically results in Yoko getting awarded custody, but he abducts their daughter. So, yeah.
Oh my God.
So John and Yoko travel the world together looking for Kyoko and trying to find her, but are unable to. So in the 1980s, she actually sends a letter in the press, and it says, "All these years, there has not been one day that I have not missed you. You're always in my heart. However, I will not make any attempts to find you now, as I wish to express to respect your privacy."
Wow.
I know. I like tear up a little bit just reading it. It's like so intense. But they do reunite in 1997, which would have been 30 years after they were initially separated.
Oh my God. I had no idea. That's crazy. That's so hard.
My heart like literally breaks for her.
Yes.
And her daughter. Dude. I mean, God.
Yeah. Oh my God.
I know. So their relationship is carrying on. They're making art. They're traveling. They're doing peace activism. They're promoting their relationship, but constantly having to defend it really, really hard. And on top of that, they're desperately trying to have a baby, and they do conceive. But when Yoko is 6 months pregnant, cops are hellbent on busting this influential druggy couple, and a drug raid commences on their house. And Yoko says, it must have been really intense. Yoko says cops were like trying to crawl in from the ceiling, from the windows, everywhere. I mean, I can only imagine how triggering that must have been, considering her past and all of her memories. So, well, she ends up miscarrying the baby at 6 months pregnant. That's like very pregnant. That's over halfway.
No, so, that's tragic. Yeah.
I know. Aww. So it's thought between the miscarriage and the bad publicity and all the hate that they received pushed them to start using heroin together.
Damn. There so, you go. John, there you have it.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's no secret this couple is doing drugs, but they're doing hard drugs.
It's hard.
Like acid, heroin. But also, like, light drugs, like the devil's lettuce, marijuana, you know, the Chiba.
Yeah.
Mary Jane.
Every day.
Right? But heroin becomes a big theme in their life, and it sort of seems like Yoko self-medicates for depression with heroin, and she's not able to kick it fully until the 80s when after John passes away.
Wow.
Yeah, so things are super rough for them at this point. And Yoko was also struggling because she knew her identity as an artist was lost in this relationship. And I mean, how could it not be when you're married to one of the most famous men in the world, right?
Seriously. So, yeah. Like on top of all of this, you're with one of the most famous people in the world right now.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it's like, and again, she's like, I'm an artist. Like, that's what I am. That's her identity.
Yeah.
So it's rumored that she starts feeling antsy and asks John for a separation for the sake of her art, but also that she started a relationship with another man, Sean Green.
Oh, wow.
So I really do think that, though she probably had a relationship, that it was more about the art, though, just knowing her.
Okay. Like an emotional, more of an emotional, creative.
More of a just like, situation. I can't think when you're, I can't be fully myself because I'm so intertwined with you that I need you to go away for a while so I can figure out who I am. Because this is just getting so blurry. They're making so much art together, you know, it must have been confusing.
Yeah.
So apparently the couple has an assistant at the time, Mei Peng. And one day Yoko calls Mei Peng into her office and tells her, "You know, me and John have been having some problems." And May's like, "Yeah."
Okay.
And she's like, "So, you know, John's going to start seeing other women." And May's like, "Yeah." And she's like, "Well, you seem chill. Like, you know, like, you want to fuck my husband?"
Oh, Oh.
She didn't say. She was like, do you want to start a relationship with, you know, John Lennon?
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, like, May was, like, super confused, sort of like, what the fuck just happened? I've known you guys for a while now. And she says she was, like, really upset about the whole thing. But then, of course, ends up having, like, this massive affair with John Lennon.
Well, yeah, no, I think it's you end up coming, if you're in a toxic relationship, of course, you end up coming to the conclusion of, like, well, at least I can, like, kind of control the situation. Mm-hmm. If I know that he's going to sleep with other bitches, at least I can pick the bitches.
I definitely think there's an element of that, of, like, she thought that she could curate exactly what would happen. Mm. When he steps out of the marriage, and that she would be in control
of, like, at least do it with this person that I know and I trust, for the most part.
And that, like, I don't think is, like, interesting enough for you to actually fall in love with, you know? I think there's, like, an element of that.
Okay.
But, but May and John enter in a relationship that lasts way longer than I think anybody was expecting. And they're together for 18 months. And if you ask May, she'll tell you that it was really a love affair and they were really in love. And there was no sign that John wanted to break it off and go back to Yoko, that they actually were, like, talking about buying a house together. Mm-hmm. She says she's the one that started him having a relationship with his son, Julian, again, because apparently Yoko didn't want him to have anything to do with his first wife or their son.
Oh.
Again, this is a rumor. You know, man. But he didn't really have a relationship with the son up until now. So, I mean, maybe kind of buy that one. And I do buy into this one because when John dies, Julian's not in his will, and he sues Yoko for part of the will, and they settle out of court for an undisclosed amount, but it's rumored to be $25 million.
Oh.
Which he fucking deserved. I mean, that's his kid. Come on. That's true. Not cool.
I mean, it's fucking Beatles.
That's his fucking kid, dude. Yeah. Come on.
Totally.
But, yeah. Oh, so, anyway, so May and John are having a great time, and then one day he gets a call from Yoko and apparently goes to meet with her and then doesn't come home to May. And May's like, what the fuck's going on? Doesn't hear from him. She finally calls and Yoko answers and basically says, like, he's exhausted. He was doing hypnotherapy yesterday. He's just really tired.
Okay.
A few days after that, he goes to see May to break it off, but she says it seems like he's confused and incoherent, and she's convinced that he was, like, brainwashed.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Damn, we need that spell.
Yeah, right?
Drop the spell.
Right? Drop the spell, Yoko. It's probably just her pussy. He probably just loved
it. True.
She got a wop.
She got a wop.
So, of course, when he breaks the news that he's going back to Yoko, and there's this whole big public demonstration, and he says it was his lost weekend, and he's like, I just don't know how my dick went astray. I called Yoko desperately wanting to go back home all the time, but she wouldn't let me. And May Pang is sort of left confused and sad and doesn't understand.
I just accidentally fell into her pussy and my dick happened to just go inside. I fell. I slipped.
How'd I get there?
Oh. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Dude, but when that's tea. Yeah.
Dude, there's more. Yes. Just wait. So he gets back. John and Yoko get back together. They get pregnant again. And on October 9th, 1975, Sean Lennon was born, which is also the same as John Lennon's birthday.
Oh, so weird.
Yeah. So it's rumored, though, that this was not a coincidence.
Oh.
And that they were intentionally born on the same day. So this dude, one of their John Lennon's and Yoko Ono's last assistant, Frederick Seaman, comes out with this book that apparently is from John Lennon's diaries, and this is where we get all of these rumors. So apparently Yoko had an affinity for numbers and really wanted Sean to be born on October 9th.
Okay.
She goes into the hospital a few days prior complaining of labor pains and undergoes a C-section. But it's rumored that when Sean is born, he exhibits signs of withdrawal from drugs and that Yoko intentionally had a C-section on the 9th of October to secure them having the same birthday because she had such an affinity for the date.
Okay.
Well, yeah. I don't know if it's a rumor or not, but wow, is that wild.
Yeah.
So, you know, and she's also in her 40s, so it's not like wild for her to have a C-section, right? Oh,
totally. Yeah.
Yeah, and they had already had 3 miscarriages. So in a way, it makes sense that she would have a C-section.
Yeah.
But Peter says that the baby is born shaky and addicted to heroin.
Yeah.
And that
AHS
has to, and that he has to undergo a spinal tap, and that Yoko and John have to flee the hospital because they're so afraid that the baby's going to get taken from them.
Oh, wow.
So who knows what's really true there.
Dude.
But yeah, so apparently they're just over the moon for Sean. They both take a hiatus from music. And John really becomes a doting father, takes care of the baby. And they seem really happy. And listen, the relationship's not all that bad. Like, they make top chart award-winning music. They explore each other's art forms. And they also have a very strong presence in, like, peace efforts and protests.
Yeah.
Yeah, then they do these like 2-week-long bedridden peaceful protests called Bed-ins for Peace.
Yeah.
So because they knew their marriage would cause such a high press event, they decide to turn their honeymoon into a peaceful protest so that all the press attention will go to the war efforts for Vietnam.
Okay.
So kind of cool, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So they do remain married for 11 years until he dies December 8th, 1980. He's shot outside of their apartment in the Dakota building, but Yoko Ono manages to get a picture of his bloodstained glasses on the ground.
Oh.
Because that's what you do when your husband just got shot.
Oh.
So again, all for the art, right?
Seriously, yeah. I know she was thinking, okay, this is a moment. Gotta
this
capture
is a moment.
It. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Wow.
She's
wow,
later
girl.
Sells it later on for thousands of dollars.
Of course. Yeah.
But after this, her life's work very much runs in the theme that it always has. She does fully quit drugs because she knows she has to take care of the baby and the business. She keeps making art. She has many collaborations. And she becomes this huge icon that we know and love today.
Yeah.
So she's actually, and just some little facts, she's actually credited with co-writing Imagine.
Oh.
And John Lennon states that it's directly influenced from Grapefruit.
Oh,
so
wow.
He says that he, yeah.
Oh,
so
yeah,
she
well,
actually
yeah.
Gets,
Imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yeah. So she gets co-writing credit for that.
Okay.
She has a deep engagement and prolonged efforts with peace activism, both in her work and organizations. She also released 14 studio albums, 8 collaborative albums, 40 singles as a lead artist, 3 Grammy nominations, 2 Grammy Awards, one of which is Album of the Year in 1982. And she's done many, many collaborations with artists such as Lady Gaga, the Pet Shop Boys, the B-52s, bunch of cool stuff.
Right. I do love, I just posted that song, I'm a Bad Dancer.
I fucking love that one.
It's such a good one.
She's got some bangers.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, they're super catchy, super fun.
Yeah.
Tons of people that you recognize, like, in the video of, like, oh, that guy, that guy, that
guy. Oh,
shit.
Guy. Right.
She knows everybody.
Yeah. No, she does. And she's, yeah, she's the shit.
Well, I can give you.
She's like a New York staple.
I can give you a little fun thing that I did in, it was like a project based on Yoko Ono's like Imagine Pieces. Mm-hmm. And they're like, yeah, try to do something like this and present it to the class and have somebody be like involved. So I was like, okay. So it was really, really early on when I went to CCA. It's my like grad school and fine arts. So it's all like hippie dippy artsy.
So this is a project you did?
Yeah. And so I was like, okay, I don't know anybody yet. So this was one of like the first weeks I was there. I didn't know anybody in the class.
It was like an art icebreaker.
100%. It was definitely like, okay, I'm just gonna like pick somebody. So I like go on the table and I like sit down like cross-legged style on the table trying to like dress kind of 60s, like kind of hippy dippy. And I was like, okay, who wants to participate? And I picked this one girl because she looks cool. She ended up being one of my friends, Minji.
Minji.
Yeah. And she is a beautiful girl from Korea, from Seoul, Korea. And she always dyes her hair like crazy colors. So yeah. I was like, oh, obviously I'm picking this beautiful, crazy color hair girl. And I was like, okay, I want you to close your eyes and we're going to do a painting together and the class is going to build it in their minds. I was trying to be like, this is going to be so good. And so I thought of a word. Oh, I'm like, okay, I'm going to think of a word right now. And I want you to tell me what you feel about that word. Describe it for me as you would describe a painting. And I'm thinking, okay, what would be a good subject matter for her to think about and give me something colorful and fun? So I thought, bird. How do you say bird? So fun fact about Minji, she fucking hates birds. She has a huge bird. Of course, I didn't know her at all. So I was like, I thought this would be, oh, you can imagine a flamingo or a peacock or a parrot or something beautiful. And I can kind of build off that. So I was like, okay, imagine bird. And she's just, I see her face like squish up. Oh shit, she doesn't like that. And I'm like, okay, imagine bird. What color is the bird? She's like, black. I'm like, okay. Out of all the colors birds can be. Okay, black. Sure. And I'm like, okay, where is it? Maybe she'll give us a scene of like, okay, where is the bird? In the parking lot. Of like, shit, okay, in the park, not in the forest. Okay, in the parking lot. Great. All right, in the parking lot. Got it.
Oh,
and
so
I was like,
good.
Well, what is the bird doing? Is the bird doing anything? Is he singing? Is he? And she's like, he's by my car. And I'm like, okay, he's by your car.
She's like, I love
that. She's like, he's not letting me into the car. He's not leaving. And he's not letting me into the car. I'm like, fuck, okay, this just went really sad.
This took a weird turn.
And yeah, so we kind of continued on for a little bit until it just got too sad. And then I'm like, okay, well, now have we all visualized a painting in our heads? And everyone's just kind of down. I'm like, yeah, I guess. Later on, we talked. I was like, really? Black? Out of all the bird in the parking lot, bitch. Like, I was thinking, oh, someone's going to say a parrot and he's red and green and he's in the rainforest and it's raining and a beautiful sunset. And it's like, no, in the fucking parking lot, bitch.
I like it though. It's real.
It was a painting that we had to build together. Regardless, I did not know it would go in that direction, but it went in a different, totally different direction of what I was expecting somebody to build off of with my question. So Yoko Ono, super inspiring. So cool. we can build a painting together and I have no idea what it's going to look like.
Dude, yeah, fuck yeah. She's the shit. Dude, good one. And Minji became like a regular staple in her friendship.
Yeah. So Minji's awesome.
Love Minji.
I'm sure she still fucking hates birds. Like we would literally be walking. This was in San Francisco. So there's like, you know, pigeons everywhere. So we would be walking down the street and she would just be like, oh. And I'm so she starts panicking and I'm so thinking, oh shit, fucking dude with knife. Like I'm thinking all the San Francisco things that could be happening right now of we are in fucking trouble. And she's like, like, birds, birds, birds in front of us. They won't go. And I'm like, oh, bitch. Okay. I got phobias are awful. But like, oh, man, I so thought it was a guy with a knife or something, man. It's birds. Okay, let me like shoot them away.
Oh, Minji.
She's awesome. Yeah. But yeah, holla Minji if you're listening. Yeah.
So, person at the party. Well, obviously Yoko Ono is still very much alive, so yeah. I thought it'd be fun to do a character instead.
Okay.
So, you've seen the movie Matilda?
Oh, yeah.
I feel like Matilda is like kind of the character because her parents are hard on her and she somehow still has a magical approach to the world.
Yeah.
And unabashedly is herself. You know, people hate on her no matter what, but she's still over there doing her little wiggle nose. Being cute as fuck and like
magic.
Making thing dance and that pancake scene. Oh, it's just like classic. Such good vibes.
That's a good one. I like right? That's unexpected too. I like that. And she uses her imagination to get things done.
Absolutely.
And escapes her fucked up situation.
Oh, a million. Yeah. No, there's lots of escapism happening.
Seriously.
But it's like
always got a good attitude about it though.
Yeah, and but she also is like sassy.
Yeah.
You know, in her own right.
Yeah.
So, last quote, a dream you dream alone may be a dream, but a dream two people dream together is a reality. Oh. Whisper your dream to a cloud. So, mad love for Yoko Ono. Yeah. That definitely is fitting with the story you just told.
Seriously. Yeah, no, seriously. Oh, right? I love that.
Good. Yeah, good one.
Yeah, learned a lot. Yoko Ono, absolute icon, legend. Yeah. One of
She's
the few,
91.
Yeah, one
She's
of the few people that's still alive that we talk about, still making artwork, making music.
The first person we've talked about that's still alive. And she actually has an exhibit going on right now at the Tate Modern in England.
Fancy.
I could be wrong on that. Yeah, so it's like a huge, like you can walk through and see and Try and get it if you're in our UK listeners, because we have a ton. So,
yeah.
Hi, guys.
Hi, guys.
Cheerio.
Cheerio.
I think. You're like, hey.
Awesome.
But, yeah. So, we have Instagram.
Baroque.v.podcast.
We have a 5-star rating option on Spotify and Apple Podcasts.
Yeah.
5 stars is appreciated.
Thank
if you don't have anything nice to say, slide into our DMs and we'll work on it.
Yeah. Yeah. If there's a conflict of any kind, you've got conflicting information or you just want to say something to us.
You hate it.
You hate it. And you need to express that because
we are but a mere
oppression.
And
wait, what was it?
Oppression's the opposite of expression.
So if you feel like you need to express yourself in our DMs, feel free. We'll figure it out. It's fine. Check out our website, baroquebpodcast.com. You can sign up for our Patreon there. We're getting new things on
shout
Patreon.
Out to our new patrons. Thank you guys
Thank
for joining.
You. Oh, we love you.
We love you.
Bye. Bye.